It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me.
And then who locked you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Sure, we're not going to put you folks in any trouble.
Oh, nonsense. Our home is yours.
We couldn't get through the film. We were so disgusted by what we were seeing that we had to stop.
This is God.
Bring on the stabby stabby, you know? That's what classroom for.
Baby's bad. You bad. Bad juicy.
The favorite I'm actually going to say is that Hills Have Eyes.
What do you want?
I want to hear you scream.
Serpent in the Rainbow, I think.
Serpent
about
in the
that
Rainbow.
One. I think about that one more than I think about Nightmare.
Bill Pullman.
Alice has been bad.
People under the stairs. Thank you, New. People
now
under
bringing
the stairs.
My crush for A.J. Langer.
What are you waiting for, dickhead? You want to fry me? Then do it, you fucking insect.
I like Shaq.
I knew he'd pipe up.
I can't say anything.
I knew he would pipe up.
I'm the demon that is taking the guise of Fred Krueger to haunt the dreams of those responsible for the original story.
Listen, asshole!
No, you listen, you little bitch. You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish, understand?
Well, taking 90s horror movies, you can't ignore the Wes Craven elephant in the 90s with Scream.
I'm really gonna miss everything. I mean, I will cherish now every Wes Craven movie that I will watch. He continues to be relevant even to this day.
This is Cash Wampum, and you're listening to the Horror 101 Show. By the time you listen to this, it will have been a couple of weeks since Wes Craven passed away. But right now, at this very moment, it is very fresh, very painful news. And as much as we didn't want to, we are obliged to create yet another memoriam show, and this time there was no hesitation on the subject. I get a text Sunday night, I'm playing poker. The macabre Todd Jervy texts me, "Breaking news, Wes Craven dies at 76. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Really? Within 10 minutes, I had nude, world-famous, and cult sensation all agreeing on running the microphone the next day. Our first emergency podcast, and that's only half the people who got involved for this 46 episode. Derek came from the States to join us. Elvis will be in the building later. We got a couple of call-ins. There's lots to talk about as we give the Horror 101 treatment to Wes Craven.
Somebody once, when I was first starting in films in New York, says, if you want something on your gravestone and you're in the film business, I think the best thing is filmmaker.
Your thoughts?
Well, I remember when you messaged me last night, you're like, what are you doing tomorrow night? You want a podcast? And I was just like, wow, we just rolled through two pretty quick. And so I jokingly said, why? Who died? And he comes back to Wes Craven, and I'm like, are you shitting me? Because we mentioned him in the Essential Sequel episode, so you just cursed.
Yeah, no, I mean, the man was 76 and had brain cancer. Nobody gave him a long timeline at that point.
I couldn't believe you were asking us to podcast, because we had just done the two with Paul. And when you said that, you said, podcast tomorrow night. And I'm like, you mean to listen? Did you finish the second show already? Were you working all day?
No, I'm like, okay.
No, we need to podcast.
I always know that usually our podcast nights are Monday. I know you're busy the rest of the week. I know it's last minute. I'm like, okay, if this happens on a Sunday night, if I pull enough strings and call in enough favors, I can get the crew together the next night. And I started messaging you guys immediately. And I got Cookson in on it because, okay, I mean, Wes Craven to me is one of the reasons why I got into horror in the first place. Nightmare on Elm Street, I think I put it quite well on Facebook when I mentioned I watched Nightmare on Elm Street when I was just old enough to be able to watch a film of that caliber or that intensity, but still young enough and impressionable enough and naive enough to think that that shit might actually happen. Like, I was afraid to go to bed for days after watching that movie. That movie scared the hell out of me.
We all took turns dressing as Freddy when we were young. We all had the cool plastic claw you could buy, and
even though we couldn't pull it off as fat guys. You can't do Fred Krueger when you're fat, sorry, you just can't do it.
No. Stripes aren't flattering.
No, horizontal stripes aren't flattering. Yeah.
At some point, I mean, the conversation has to turn to where is horror going to go now? We've lost how many iconic figures in recent history? And Christopher Lee was bad enough, but to lose Wes Craven, we're not just losing a horror figure, we're losing an innovator, like a creator, like somebody who, like, built horror. Modern horror was pretty well invented by Wes Craven.
Yeah.
In the early 70s, Wes Craven and Sean S. Cunningham were commissioned to make a very small, very cheap horror flick for some theater owners. It was to be played as the second bill for whatever feature was playing at the time. In 1972, they delivered that movie called The Last House on the Left, starring David Hess. It was a modern retelling of a medieval folktale of rape, murder, and revenge, and it was Craven's directorial debut. For its time, it depicted some of the most sadistic and graphic atrocities ever shot for a film. With a smart marketing campaign, it gained notoriety. A major distributor bought it up, released it nationwide, and it went boom.
And the road leads to nowhere.
Nude, you had some trivia for us on, Last House on the Left?
Last House was released August 30th, 1972, 43 years to the day that Wes Craven died.
And the road leads to nowhere.
Listen, why don't you guys let us go? We know you were just kidding around.
Oh, yes.
We'll split, and we won't say anything to anybody, I swear.
You must think we're pretty stupid. No. We ain't stupid.
The story is, these two girls go to a concert, and they wind up meeting these ex-cons, and the ex-cons kidnap them, take them to the trees, rape and murder them, and then they get holed up at this house that happens to be the parents of one of the girls that they just killed, and without them knowing, the parents figure out that these people are somehow responsible for the disappearance of their child, and they take gruesome revenge on these ex-cons. That's the story right there. But you couldn't watch the movie, eh?
We couldn't get through the film. We were so disgusted by what we were seeing that we had to stop. We got about halfway through it, and I think it was the graphic rape scene that we just couldn't watch anymore. We said, no, we're not watching this. It actually disgusted us. It was shocking. I can only imagine what it would have been for audiences who saw this in the day. You know?
Now, I'm going to tell this little lady here to do something. And if she doesn't do exactly what I tell her to, I want you to cut her, friend.
Wow, brother!
One time. Hey,
come on. What was the big tagline for Last House on the Left? All the trailers at the time, it's only a movie, it's only a movie. Keep telling yourself, it's only a movie.
It's filmed in this grainy film stock. It almost looks like a snuff film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has this kind of low-budget vibe to it that makes it seem genuine, and it's creepy for that.
He was hanging around a lot of documentary filmmakers at the time, and he learned a lot of shit from them, and a lot of the rules he learned from these documentary film people is like, never turn the camera away and never interfere when you're filming a documentary. And that was what he took with making Last House on the Left. So it's all handheld, no dollies or any of that shit. It, like you said, there's a grit to it. It looks like it's somebody's home camera.
Yeah.
And I think Last House on the Left would have fucked people over back in 72 because it looked real, the same way something like Blair Witch Project really fucked us up in 99 because it looked real. It didn't. It was nothing like we'd ever seen.
Or Cannibal Holocaust.
Exactly. There's two kinds of horror. There's the kind of horror that deals with the supernatural shit where as you're watching it, as the viewer, you can say to yourself, okay, there's no way that this could ever happen, this is fiction, and I'm safe because of this. And then there's the kind of horror that deals with the real evil that humans can do to each other, and this is the kind of horror where you watch it and you're not so comfortable because what you're watching is plausible, could happen, and probably has happened. and probably worse than this movie is showing you. You know what I mean? And a lot of people aren't comfortable with that because there's no safety net there. There's real bad people out there, and that's why you're uncomfortable with a film like that. That's what I think.
And suddenly, people were lining up around the block and getting in fistfights and having heart attacks, and it was a big scandal. And Sam Arkoff heard about it and bought it and took it national, and suddenly I was a horror film director.
And the road leads to nowhere.
Hello, KUI. This is Air Force Rescue. We have you loud and clear.
After numerous failed attempts to make another hit outside the genre, Wes Craven finally came back to do another terror picture in 1977. Another tale based on an old legend of a cannibalistic clan preying on wary travelers in the middle of nowhere. This was The Hills Have Eyes.
I had another friend, Peter Locke was his name, who kept coming to me and saying, you gotta do another Last House. And it was the last thing I wanted to do. I didn't want to go back to that dark place again, you know? And he says, come to Vegas, we can go out in the desert. There's no, we don't need permits, and just write something in the desert. And that's how The Hills Have Eyes came about.
You come out here and stick your life in my face. Stick your fingers in my pie. That was a bad mistake.
Our first call-in has been a long-time listener of the Horror 101 show. He joined us before for our 30th episode. Please welcome back, Eugene Trepanier.
Eugene!
Yes!
How are you this evening?
I'm good. How about you guys?
We're fine. We're having drinks and talking about Wes Craven. We're thinking about Wes Craven. He just passed away yesterday. You got any thoughts on the man? What do you think?
Oh, we need to talk about music from the heart.
This is Horror 101, not Oscar Bait 101.
No, we're not going to talk about Paris, Je T'aime.
Je T'aime?
Please, Je T'aime.
Oh. Alright, Eugene, favorite Wes Craven movie and why, please?
The favorite I'm actually going to say is The Hills Have Eyes.
Really?
Because he did Isolation so well, and they built up the final bad guy as this gigantic monster, and it was just a guy. And I thought it was just so well done, because you're expecting what, like, the remake had, some big ungodly-looking monster, but it was just a big guy.
I'm in Jupiter. He's in Mars.
You and Pluto in Mars.
We in, Papa. We in.
And my friends, Elvis has entered the building.
Was it Pluto or Saturn or Mars or something? What was his name?
Uranus.
I can't remember.
Elvis, keep it clean.
Let's go fight Uranus.
Uranus clean.
You know, and I've known you a long time. You've always, Elvis, you've always reminded me of Wes Craven.
How's it going?
Something in the eyes. Very soft-spoken, very intelligent. You, for some reason, you always reminded me of Wes Craven.
I take that as a huge compliment.
I think it's the eyebrows and the lack of a chin.
Oh,
it's not a bad. I mean, he's a smaller chin to Elvis.
Damn you!
You know that. That's why we're looking and going.
He's
all
self-conscious much forever now.
You have to speak up for the microphone.
All right, I'm booking my chinoplasty surgery.
Nothing. I'm gonna watch your goddamn car rush down. Yes, I will. I'll see the wind blow your dried-up siege away. I'll eat the heart of your stinking memory. I'll eat the brains of your kids! I'm in! Yeah!
We were just talking about Hills Have Eyes.
Mercury.
Admittedly, not... I've seen it once or twice. What? Not one of my favorites, but it... He was that was back in the 70s grit days, you know, like, he made Last House on the Left, which really appalled a lot of people because of its ferocity, and...
And he introduced us to Michael Berryman.
Yeah, Michael Berryman.
What are your defensive capabilities at this time? They're just sitting nice.
Going through that wash. I'll never see us coming.
And Michael Berryman was a very nice guy when I met him a couple years ago at the Motor City Nightmares.
Yep.
And all the other stars there were charging for their autographs, and he wasn't charging at all. coming out and taking pictures with the guy in a wheelchair in the aisle and, like, making it, it was huge inconvenience, but he's smiling, and you're just like, you know, God bless the guy. He's just known as being, you're creepy looking as fuck. That's his lot in life, all right? So they, when you know, it, and he loves it. It and is still being a very nice guy, and yet everyone else, no matter how small of a part they were charging up the ass to get just a picture with him.
Yeah, you had your two creepy looking guys. You had Michael Berryman, and then you had Vincent Schiavelli, who was like in everything for being creepy looking. But unfortunately, we lost him too, actually, just recently.
Baby's that. You fat. And juicy.
The Hills Have Eyes, it's probably one of the first WTF endings I can remember. Buddy there, the brother-in-law or something, was fighting him and ended up killing him and rescuing the baby. And then it just fades to red and the credits roll.
That's
and
that it,
was
eh? It.
And it was definitely unique, that's for sure. I don't remember, up until that point, you know, you're kind of used to movies kind of have, even whether it was a horror movie or whatever, you know, genre, it ended with a nice bow and say, okay, this is the end, nice music, panning camera, and then credits roll. But yeah, that was a very unique way of kind of sealing the deal. So,
did you ever watch, and Wes Craven did this one too, The Hills Have Eyes Part 2 from 1984?
That one I can't really remember much about.
Apparently that one is like, that goes down, it's probably a worse sequel than Exorcist 2, if you can believe it. What's Newt doing? Because basically all part two was most of it was rehashing the first movie. That's all it was. Yeah. And it was horrible.
So worse than Highlander 2? Worse than...
I don't know.
Hold on. Oh. So when you say worst sequel ever, that's a really tough...
Halloween part 3, Season of the Witch?
No. We're dealing with...
I already mentioned Exorcist.
We're dealing with sequels only. Sequels only.
For Troll 2?
Eugene, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for being one of our loyal listeners, sir.
Well, thank you for doing the show, guys. I love it every time.
Eugene, any other thoughts on Mr. Craven?
Just, I'm glad he brought us Freddy Krueger.
Nightmare on Elm Street was one of a few movies that really bothered me growing up. I dreaded nighttime for a good week after watching it, and the only way I could break the spell was to watch it again and again. The film starts out with this dirty pair of hands making this ungodly razored glove, then the title comes up, and with this horrible scream, the claws come ripping through a curtain, we hear thunder in the background, this horrifying music kicks in, and we watch this young girl in her little white nightie making her way down a dark, dingy corridor. Now, from our perspective, it looks like she's just come from this glowing, bright, ethereal, and peaceful white light that's at the end of the tunnel. And you're thinking to yourself, dear God, girl, turn the fuck around and go back from whence you came. But no. For some reason, she continues deep into this hellish boiler room, quite certain that she's being followed, and sure enough, this dark specter is on her tail, and just as he gets his hands on her, she wakes up out of this nightmare. It was a perfect, terrifying opening for a film, and the best part is, this was just an hors d'oeuvre for the amount of terror that was coming the next 90 minutes.
The man himself was based on a man who frightened me as a child. Woke me from my sleep one night shambling down the sidewalk in Cleveland. I think he was just a random drunk going down the sidewalk, but he had an uncanny ability somehow to realize this little kid was looking down on him from the second story apartment window, and he just stopped and then he just looked right up at me. And I went and pounded on my brother's door. He was 10 years older than I was, and I said, there's a guy, he's coming for me, and my brother literally went down with a baseball bat, and the guy ran away.
I'm here.
But the essence of that man was that he enjoyed terrifying a child and enjoyed sort of destroying the comfort of innocence. So that became Freddy.
That may have been the genesis of the look and the idea for Fred Krueger, but a lot of it also came from a real story too, because there was some research into, it was a sleep study, mm-hmm. wasn't it? Sleep deprivation that they were doing to see the physical effects. And it was done, where was this, in China, I think it was? where there were people who were hallucinating.
South America.
Yeah,
from the Philippines.
Yeah.
They were staying up all night. They were taking anti-sleep pills or something like that, and then they were dying after having reports of vivid nightmares.
Yeah.
And their heart was giving out on lack of sleep or something like that. Yeah, he read that headline, and that's where that idea came from.
You can stay awake for about a week.
They still do that now with Warcraft. I'm convinced that World of Warcraft or Warcraft 3 is a Korean sleep deprivation experiment.
Cartman.
Mom! Yeah. Fuck it!
Her second nightmare that kills her, what it pushed me over the edge. Like, that is probably, that scene back when I first watched it, it's probably one of the scariest fucking things I'd ever seen in my life.
Please, God.
This is God.
It represented a true nightmare in every sense. Same setting, you wake up in bed, so you think that it's real, but it's not. You go out in your own property, you think that it's real, but it's not. And you're met with the specter that's doing things that are just not natural. The long arms, the scraping of the nails, it doesn't look natural. It's teleporting. It's coming out and mangling itself and watching your reaction to mangling itself, and then it attacks you.
The gangly run through the alley is like... that's back when Freddy was... a maniac.
Yeah.
You know, he of course, as the series went on, he became
pop icon.
Less. He became just a funny quip after some schlocky a pun. But you know, this is still when he was, say, the first two, pretty much, right? Where he was
business.
Because it actually went darker for part two.
He was business in the first couple of movies, and then he came out in the light, and he was the welcome to prime time bitch kind of guy.
You want to know who Fred Krueger was? He was a filthy child murderer who killed at least 20 kids in the neighborhood. Kids we all knew.
New Line Cinema was, for the longest time, was called the house that Freddy built. I mean, that place was fucking bankrupt. By the time Nightmare on Elm Street was in the can, they ran out of money. Nightmare on Elm Street almost didn't happen because they didn't have the money to print the copies off to send to the fucking theaters. Bob Shea had to, like, he had to hawk everything and scrounge for money just to get it made, and then it took off.
What'd you dream? I dreamed about a guy in a dirty red and green sweater. Well, what about the fingernails? Oh, he scraped his fingernails along things. Actually, they were more like finger knives or something, something he'd made himself. But they made a horrible sound. Nancy, you dreamed about the same creep I did.
Our next caller is actually a colleague of ours. She's one of a trio of ladies who runs a bi-monthly podcast called Archivist Bet on Sexy Witches, where the three of them give a geek girl perspective on all things horror, sci-fi, and fantasy. Please welcome Elizabeth Catherine Gray.
Thank you for having me on. I wish it was better circumstances.
But
I actually come at this from a different angle. When I was a kid, I was much more into science fiction and fantasy. So my first Wes Craven movie was actually Swamp Thing with Adrian Barbeau.
So
I absolutely adored that movie. First of all, it's got a superhero vibe to it, which of course I totally loved. And Adrian Barbeau I'm still to this day, she's like one of my favorite people in the world. And so he kind of opened it up to me that way. And his film right after that was Serpent in the Rainbow, was the next film that I saw of his. I didn't actually see Nightmare on Elm Street until after those movies. I was much older. Matter of fact, I saw him out of order. He was so much more than deathcore, and I want to point that out because the man has this vast career, some of it we don't even know about. I was talking with my friends on this today, and a lot of people don't realize that supposedly there's like 40 or 50 pornography movies out there that Wes Craven has directed, and nobody knows their name because he does it under pseudonym. So we actually, as fans, as horror fans, as Wes Craven fans, are obligated to find these movies.
I accept that challenge.
Liz, I will point out here that you may have just found the link in the puzzle to me, because when I'm looking at his IMDb page, there is, like, you know, the stats of died, height was 6'2", and then also known as Abe Snake. So I'm wondering if, I mean, I on it, there's no link to it on anything. That sounds like a porn name to me.
Supposedly there's multiple pseudonyms out there, so that could very well be true. The real question is trying to find them, somebody knows that answer out
challenge
there.
Challenge accepted.
A lot of successful actors will tell you that it was luck that they were given a chance at stardom, and Wes Craven has been responsible for launching the careers of several huge entertainers.
I have to say, as a female, it is absolutely important that Johnny Depp is in my life, and it was because of Wes Craven. Yep. So, every girl in the world thanks Wes Craven for that. Every girl.
Hold on.
Actually.
Go ahead, Newt, tell her.
Yeah, actually, Elizabeth, it's his daughter that had to be credited, because apparently it was between Johnny Depp and another actor for the role of Glenn in Nightmare. And he just wasn't able to make a decision, so he asked his daughter. His daughter said, well, he's kind of cute, you should get him. So that's actually how it started.
I remember that, too. And the other thing is a lot of people also know that Robert Englund almost wasn't Fred.
Yep.
The first person that was offered the job was my boy, David Warner, who is one of my favorite films of all time, called Time After Time with Malcolm McDowell. Please look that film up. I just always wondered what that version of Nightmare on Elm Street would have been like.
We were actually just talking about that, Cash and I, this afternoon, how it would, if it had David Warner instead of Robert Englund, it would have been a totally different way the whole movie would have actually been presented.
Hold here, let me give you this scenario, okay? David Warner would have been Fred Krueger, and it would have sucked, and we would have never had Sark and Tron. There would have been no reason to grow up in the 80s if that would have happened.
He's also credited, incidentally, as giving Sharon Stone her first starring role
in Deadly Blessing, Berryman film. Have you seen that one where she moves this blonde lady, Sharon Stone? She moves in next to this Amish people. And who was the guy who was Cabby from Escape from New York? What was his name?
Ernest Borgnine.
Ernest Borgnine. He plays the father of this Amish, and his son is Michael Berryman. And they just tag this woman as the succubus, and they just terrorize her because they think she's this demon. He hired Bruce Willis to be in one of the Twilight Zone episodes and kind of got his career started as
First featured role Bruce Willis had.
Yeah.
Was in the Twilight Zone.
So, Nude, you can thank Wes Craven for getting Bruce Willis out of the Twilight Zone.
Glass? Who gives a shit about Glass? Who the fuck is this?
Thank you for having me on, fellas, and Miss Nude as well.
Thanks for calling,
thank
Liz.
You.
Take care.
Much
love. Talk to you later. Bye. Right. Cheers. By the way, Dr. Allen, what did you dream about this afternoon? The woman in your arms? The sea at your doorstep? No. You dreamt of me and of the grave. I know, because I was there. And I can be there every time you close your eyes. The pain I cause you in the room upstairs is nothing to the pain I can cause in your own mind. Remember that, Dr. Allen.
Your favorite Wes Craven movie? Is it Nightmare on Elm Street?
Well, I'll say it in stages. I mean, when I was a kid, it was definitely Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
In my teen 20s, I'd say I probably obsessed about Last House on the Left, because that was into the whole shock, Mondo, and just extreme exploitation type films. And then in my later years, I guess Serpent in the Rainbow. I think about that one more than I think about Nightmare on
Bill
Street.
Pullman.
What do you know about zombification?
Pardon me?
Zombification. The process of making zombies, the living dead.
Just what I've seen on the Late Show.
Fantastic movie, and I loved it. It's just the atmosphere of it, the subject matter, voodoo. I mean, you don't see that too often.
Again, a movie that's kind of plausible, because voodoo is about, like, they introduce...
Believe,
the option.
Believability of it definitely is what sold me on it. Something like Nightmare on Elm Street is a total fantasy horror type situation where Serpent in the Rainbow, nothing seemed far-fetched in that movie.
No, I could give you a drug to make you hallucinate.
Yeah.
I could give you a drug to slow everything down to the point where you're alive, but you have no stimuli. You won't. You would not react to a pin going underneath your eye.
That's like an anesthetic of some sort.
And you could be buried alive because somebody thinks that you're dead.
It's a fantastic subject matter, fantastic movie. I mean, as far as how much, even the whole selling of it in a way that it was based on a true story or based on true events, it was fantastic. It's a brilliant film.
No, 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 no rest. You'll see it all. You'll feel it, the cold. In the coffin, it is worse. Much, much worse.
When he wakes up in the grave and starts screaming, and the camera just pans to the graveyard, and you just hear him screaming from
the
his grave.
Scream.
From the that was just... That still gives me chills just to think
right
about that.
Girl.
Just,
putting the tarantula on his face?
Yeah.
When they're
when
burying him?
At first.
Yeah,
man.
To keep you company. It's like, what the fuck, man? What else are you going to do to me?
Yeah, exactly.
He's in the chair interrogating him. They got the spike right next to his fucking nuts. Whack! I want you to scream. No problem. What octave? What octave do you want,
I was thinking
man?
About the whole idea of getting excited and getting angry and your octave's going higher.
Yeah.
Didn't we mention that a couple
of times? What octave do you want? I'll scream for you all you want. I'll give you the first time I ever watched that film. Because he goes to Haiti, and he gets all wrapped up, and then he comes back to L.A. And you think, okay, we're back safe in L.A.
Exactly.
And then he's at that dinner, and that one girl takes, she's drinking from the glass, and then just takes a look at him and starts eating her fucking glass. And then comes over the table at him and attacks him. I'm like, holy fuck, what the hell's going on here? All of a sudden, he did a perfect job of making you feel safe. You're in this nice, comfortable, recognizable urban setting, you're away from me, it's coming for you, you know, and he knows
ending,
I gotta go back to deal with this.
The ending was a little bit hokey, the final scene with him being basically pulled into hell. I mean, it, for the effects and the limitations of budget or whatever back then, I mean, the story still stands, I think. It was great.
Ladies and gentlemen, as warden of this facility, I'm directed by the state to request that you all bear witness to the execution of Horace Pinker.
Shocker with Horace Pinker.
And Mitch Pileggi.
Remember that one?
Are we classifying that as a bad movie?
The prisoner have any final words?
Yes, matter of fact, I do. Your pitiful little memory's wiped it all out, hasn't it? I used to beat you good, boy. I was beating you good when your mama tried to stop me with a gun.
You shut your mouth, you fuck!
Shocker for me was a meh movie. Shocker for me would have been better, but you know what? Okay.
I liked Shocker.
I knew he'd pipe up.
I can't say anything.
I knew he would
one.
Pipe up, but for me, this was back. Okay, Deep Star 6 and Leviathan were like counterparts. They came out at the same time. There was a Armageddon had the Deep Impact.
Yeah.
And
Shocker
had the Horror Show.
The Horror Show.
Oh,
with,
great,
and the
yeah.
Horror Show.
All it did was give me a hard on. Remember that? When he first was electrocuted, that was the worst.
You realize we're gonna
Andrew made me rewind that.
That clip's
that's
gonna get reused
sound
again
like,
and again.
No, that's fine. Andrew
didn't rewind anything.
Cash, when we first watched the Horror Show, I swear to God, we rewound that about 3,000 times. All I did was give me a hard on. All I did was give me a hard on. So.
Is that what?
Is that my new ringtone?
Yeah, exactly. That's rewinding. That's what all that.
You be careful. That brother sister act you messed with are evil, plain and simple. Tail end of the craziest family you ever heard of. Every generation more insane than the one before it. Started out as a family running a funeral home, selling cheap coffins for expensive prices. And they got their fingers in the real estate started making a lot of money taking over people's homes. The more money they got, the greedier they got. The greedier they got, the crazier they got. All sorts of rumors about what's gone on in that place. Never proved it because the police didn't take it serious. But believe me, when I was a kid, none of us ever walked past that house.
People under the stairs. I remember when People Under the Stairs came out. I forget what year it was. I was still pretty young at the time, and everybody was like, "Oh, this is gonna be the scariest fucking thing you've ever seen." Because it was Wes Craven, I believed it. I'm like, "Okay, this guy gave us Nightmare on Elm Street. He might hit lightning again." And I watched People Under the Stairs, and the first half of the movie was great.
Yeah.
The first half of the movie was fucking phenomenal. This sister, brother-sister duo, they were scary.
Dead meat. I could have killed him, but I'll let the people under the stairs do it.
Those two, and then all of a sudden, halfway through the movie, it turns into fucking slapstick comedy.
Yeah, it was like, really hokey.
What the fuck just happened here?
Shut the fuck up!
I think he must have had some kind of a direction at the beginning, and then he just figured, how are you gonna turn a concept like this into a serious horror movie? So he just went for, like you said, he just went for slapstick. He just went for schlocky kind of hokey horror, I guess. Black comedy.
If the tone of the whole movie was the tone of this first half, I think it would have been phenomenal. But at some point, there was this conscious decision to turn this brother-sister duo into a slapstick piece of shit.
So what you're saying is the Full Metal Jacket of horror films.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Brian Stewart, absolutely correct. Well done.
Well said.
Absolutely. Yeah. You want to watch the first 45 minutes, and then you want to toss it away, because it just gets stupid.
It's so funny, you're talking about wanting to know the inspiration behind turning it schlocky and People Under the Stairs, because even here saying Wes Craven was inspired to write this film after reading a real-life news story about burglars breaking into a house. When authorities arrived, the burglars had disappeared, but they discovered locked doors with noises coming from behind them. Children had been locked up inside the rooms by their parents, never allowed to go outside. And nothing in that says anything about, like, oh, hilarity ensues.
So, you got a boyfriend?
Why, you want to ask me out on a date?
Maybe. Do you have a boyfriend?
No.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
Because I want to know who I'm looking at.
What did you say?
I want to know who I'm talking to.
That's not what you said.
What do you think I said?
Well, taking 90s horror movies, you can't ignore the Wes Craven elephant in the 90s was Scream.
The beginning of Scream I thought was genius. That whole Drew Barrymore sequence was absolute fucking genius. 10 minutes of just somebody making popcorn, getting a call that may or may not be a prank, actually having a civilized, kind of playful conversation with this person, and then it just accelerates into madness.
Listen, asshole!
No, you listen, you little bitch! If you hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish, understand?
Also taking the audience and saying, they famously talked about it as saying the reason why they used a bigger name actress is they wanted you to be caught off guard. Mm-hmm. Here's the biggest name in the movie, and we're going to kill her in the first 10 minutes. So suddenly the rules don't apply.
I don't know. What I really liked most about Scream was that, yes, it was self-referential, but I kind of liked that the villains behind it all were movie experts, because we hadn't really seen any self-referential. That hadn't been done yet, but that, unfortunately, it was kind of the fruit from the poisonous tree, because it led to so much crap afterwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other element I like too is that it brings murder back to a small town, right? Small, cozy.
It's like the small, sleepy New England town type thing.
Okay, yeah. And shoehorning in the fact that the school janitor is a man named Fred who has a red and green sweater and wears a fedora.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. No, Fred, I'm not talking to you.
Wasn't Henry Winkler the
principal? He was the principal.
Yeah.
so sick. Your entire havoc-inducing, thieving, whoring generation disgusts me. You're both expelled. Get out.
But I liked how in Scream 2 how there were no safe places, that people could die in broad daylight, that the killer had the ability to get to even places that we would normally feel secure, you know, at the party where there's a number of people around, right? And yet he still managed to pick people off. And so you get these attacks that normally would happen under dark, shadowy elements.
It's usually the whole get him alone and then, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice try, Randy. Tell Tatum to hurry up, okay? Bye now.
If you hang up on me, you'll die just like your mother. Do you want to die, Sydney? Your mother sure didn't.
Fuck you, you creep.
Yeah, some people argue it killed the horror movie. Because for a decade after, horror movies became a parody.
Yeah.
So it was Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson basically torching the existing horror and saying, let's start over and let's try something new now.
I don't think that's a problem at all. I think that was a great idea because he had to reinvent what he was doing. And by introducing people to Scream and what the concept of the movie was, opened the door to so much more.
And I think it was his way of burning the field, you know, so that something new can grow out of it.
Yeah. All the way up to Scream 4. Now that there won't be another sequel, we can't have 5 Cream.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
I'm getting another beer. You want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
Oh! You see, you push the laws, and you end up dead. Okay, I'll see you in the kitchen with a knife.
One movie we have to talk about, is I know Paul B would want us to, would be New Nightmare.
New Nightmare.
Yeah.
Which, okay, and I know he and I have talked about this. New Nightmare, he likes more than the original Nightmare in Elm Street. I think it's blasphemy. He really got it, though. He got exactly what New Nightmare was supposed to be. I think he synced with what Wes Craven really wanted to do. And my biggest problem with New Nightmare, sure it had Heather Langenkamp back. Sure, it had Robert Englund. I even like seeing Bob Shea as the producer and Wes Craven himself has a cameo in it as the writer-director of these films. I enjoyed all that. But it wasn't Fred Krueger. It was a fucking demon in the guise of Fred Krueger, and it just bothered me, you know?
But, could you see echoes of him taking that and going, this is a great concept. Let's take it to the next level, and he went to Scream.
Miss me.
It was like 10 years after Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm thinking, oh my God, Heather Langenkamp is still fucking hot. She still has great fucking hair. And, you know, I appreciated shit like that.
Yeah.
I didn't like the new glove. I didn't like the new makeup.
Yeah.
I didn't like the trench coat, even though I'm fucking Cash Wampa. That's my whole thing, is I didn't like the trench coat. He still had the hat. Things I did appreciate about it was the one scene in the hospital. He kills the nanny. A la Tina style, dragging her up the wall and onto the ceiling, defying gravity, only this time you watch it happening.
Ever play Skin the Cat?
You can see him, whereas when Tina was dead, or was being killed, you couldn't see him, he was invisible, but he still had influence dragging her up the frickin' wall onto the ceiling.
Yeah. That whole gimbaled room from the Dancing on the Ceiling music video?
That movie, I looked at it as going, okay guys, you messed up what I had created, all right? You made it a little goofy. Now I'm going to have to come in. I'm going to have to take it back over and, you know, land this plane properly. Because Freddy was at that point a laughing joke for most of the last couple of movies.
He was pop culture kind of deal. Yeah. He was the smart.
But he was only a few steps away from the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, I just want to say, with New Nightmare, the only thing that I really felt disappointed about watching that movie was that there was no real clash between Freddy Krueger and Robert Englund, the actual person. And we kept waiting for it. We expected to see it going into this movie, right, given its premise, and it never happens. In fact, you're almost surprised how little Robert Englund is in the movie.
Oh.
The one thing that movie got perfectly was when they were interviewing Heather Langenkamp in that talk show there, mm-hmm. and the wall, something slashes through the wall, and in comes Fred Krueger as the Freddy that we know, mm-hmm. in the same makeup with the hat, and he's the wisecracking asshole. I'm like, now there's Freddy, but it was just for a fraction of a moment.
Yeah.
As if Wes Craven was to say, I know that this is Freddy. This is what Freddy has become, but now we're gonna yeah. transcend that and go a little bit different. Cool. Yes. Was it perfectly executed? I don't think so. And nefarious Paul B's not here to fucking defend himself, so fuck you in China.
Maybe you should read his email. Oh, well, we have a discussion.
Yes, Paul B had something to say here.
The man is nefarious.
This email all the way from the other side of the world. Here it is. Hey, y'all. Shitty that I can't be there tonight. Even shittier that the first time we try something in this way, it's for this reason. There's been a small handful of notable deaths that have really made me stop and think. Robin Williams, Phil Hartman, John Candy, and a few others, and now, sadly, Wes Craven. I first saw Nightmare on Elm Street in the winter of 88. I just moved to Windsor, and my best friend had a copy on Beta. That's going back. During a sleepover during our Christmas break, we decided to watch it, and I was freaked the fuck out. It was scarier than anything I had ever seen. Here was a movie monster that I couldn't ignore. I had seen Friday the 13th, and unless I was going to hang out at camp, I wasn't going to run the risk of crossing Mrs. Voorhees or her mutant son. But Freddy was different. I couldn't avoid sleeping, nor could I avoid dreaming. To say that Nightmare had an impact on me when I was a kid is an understatement. The night we watched the flick, I couldn't sleep. All that fear and terror came from the mind of Wes Craven. This movie was different in a way that few horror films could dare to be. It was visceral and brutal. As I grew up, I grew to embrace horror films to the point now where horror is my favorite genre of movie. And as I've said many times, it's always a coin toss as to which is my favorite horror movie, Halloween or A Nightmare on Elm Street. I was fortunate enough to meet Mr. Craven at Fan Expo in 2008. The old adage of never meeting your hero so you won't be disappointed, thankfully, did not apply here. He was friendly, generous, and kind. All I can say is thank you, Mr. Craven. Thank you for your films and scaring the hell out of me when I was a kid. And thank you for being the kind man you were. R.I.P., sir. That was a very nice email.
Very well said.
Are you going to tear up? Oh, Cult Sensations teared up.
No, the peppermint stuff's making my sinus.
Liar.
It's been fun to be in the business and to survive. It's been fun to sit in the back of audiences and watch them scream and jump and laugh.
We need final thoughts on the man. Nude, do you want to start? Get in here.
I was looking forward to what he was doing next, and that's unfortunate. I mean, I'm really going to miss everything. I mean, I will cherish now every Wes Craven movie that I will watch, thinking, you know, where it came from, how it started, and he continues to be relevant even to this day.
If they watch Prom Night, they'd save time. There's a formula to it. A very simple formula. Everybody's a suspect.
Derek?
He was an icon. You know, he was an icon of growing up in our age, and a lot of shaped a lot of the horror movie industry that we know. And so I'm just grateful for that.
What do you want?
I want to hear you scream.
Elvis?
I can't ever remember a time where I didn't celebrate his movies. I mean, I'm trying to think when it started. I mean, other than maybe Night of the Living Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street is up there as one of the first horror movies that I can remember having an impact on me. So just thank you for everything, Wes.
Why is she so bothered by a stupid nightmare anyway?
Because he was scary, that's why.
Neek.
Actually, it was funny looking through his IMDb thing. It's amazing how many of his movies I haven't seen. Basically, of the movies of his that I have seen, I'd probably have to say that, obviously, the first Nightmare on Elm Street is, you know, a classic. It is his legacy on cinema and, you know, film. The world is a better place for him doing what he did.
And you think his ghost is still trying to track you? That was a long time ago.
Long enough for him to steal a whore that nobody had missed. Long enough to raise a passel of wild kids. Long enough for a devil kid to grow up to be a devil man.
Brian Stewart.
You know, with his passing, it kind of it sat on multiple levels for me, but mostly because it kind of touches on how little of his work I see in modern horror. And it's unfortunate that I see horror going in a direction that I don't think he would necessarily approve of. The kind of slick jump scare kind of horror movies that we get fast produced today. And I'm hoping that with his passing, now that his death has kind of put him back in the forefront of people's thoughts right now, that maybe they will take this opportunity to go back and revisit his films and kind of take to heart what made a good horror film. Because I think we could really use the lessons that he taught us regarding horror.
Oh, and meanwhile.
Meanwhile?
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
If it wasn't for Wes Craven, I can honestly say that the six of us would not be here this evening. Because Nightmare on Elm Street, back when I was like 8 or 9 years old, should I have been watching it at the time? No. Did it scare the living fuck out of me? Absolutely. But over time, I learned to embrace the fear and fell in love with the genre. Decades later, I can't put it down. And it's led me to want to do this for our listeners. Whether he was dealing with a real evil that was plausible, that scared the hell out of you, or a supernatural, fictitious evil that would scare the hell out of you, the guy knew what he was doing. He was intelligent, and he was very talented. And thank God for him, because he gave us Fred Krueger. And that's all I got to say about that.
You know, when I die, it'll be, the obituary will probably be best known for inventing Freddy Krueger. You know, it'll be something like that. That'll summarize my entire career. And I think for Robert, it's the man who played Freddy Krueger. You know, no matter what else you do in life, it's just one of those things. The film has its way with you.
And there you have it, our memorial show on the recently passed Wes Craven. Obviously a huge loss to the horror community. Was everything he made perfect? No. But you want to talk about someone educating your fears? This man was it. I can't think of another director that understood his audience so well. And because of this, he was able to instill a level of dread in us that was second to none. His sense of style and innovation led to some of the scariest films we've ever seen. We'll always celebrate his work. And we'll miss him dearly. I'd like to thank the usual suspects for joining me again, and special thanks to longtime friends Derek and Elvis for coming down and helping us reflect on Mr. Craven. Shout out to the nefarious Paul B for reaching out all the way from China. We want to thank Eugene and Elizabeth Catherine Gray for calling in and sharing their thoughts as well. Be sure to look for Liz and her friends at Archivist's Bet on Sexy Witches. You'll find them on Facebook. Horror, sci-fi, and fantasy from a geek girl perspective. They're fun to listen to, and I'm sure they'd love to have you join their live discussions. For everyone here at Horror 101, this is Cash Wampum thanking you for listening and reminding you that we're going to get to that essential sequel show. I swear we are. We just have to stop horror icons from dying. I don't know, maybe we're cursed.
Yeah, you watch when you talk. You seem to be killing people by talking.
No, that's not fair. That is not fair, Eugene. Okay, I did mention Christopher Lee, and he did pass away. I said nothing about Wes Craven, ever.
I got one. Angus Scrim.
I was just thinking it.
Angus Scrim, man. That guy's got to be 100 years old.
You're saying that because, you know, the fifth film is in the can and they can't screw it up.
Yeah, you finally made Phantasm 5, which I've been waiting since 1944 for. You know, thanks for making the fifth one. Now you can pass away gracefully.